Well, hello and welcome to the Castle of Spirits, where we extend our hospitality to all who come and all who listen. This is where we tell true ghost stories. Mm-hmm. The podcast is brought to you by castleofspirits.com. I am the ghost keeper named Vince.
And I am the ghost keeper named Jane.
Together we are the ghost keepers. Jane, I've got a couple of good ghost stories to share today.
I hope so.
And I hope you brought some to the table as well.
I did not. I only brought one.
One? What's this? Is it a long one?
It's a long one.
Okay, good. Long in a good way, I suppose.
Well, duh. I wouldn't pick long in a bad way.
Well, when it comes to real, true ghost stories, there's no such thing as long. Too long.
Oh, okay.
All right. So I'm off to an awesome start.
Yeah.
You can tell I do this non-professionally.
Yeah.
I picked a ghost story today, Jane.
Okay. Vince.
That it's going to be special because it's going to lead into a story of our own. And I'm not going to say anything
okay.
else. I'm just going to read the story.
Read it now.
This was submitted by Bree in Michigan, USA in February of 2003. And it's called The Fan Ghost.
Oh, I know exactly what story you're talking about.
And it goes like this. This is just a little something that happened to me this past summer. It isn't as freaky as some other ones, but it's still kind of creepy and unexplainable. My aunt lives only a few blocks away from me, and during this summer, when school was out, my younger cousin was over here quite a bit, almost every night of the week. So our parents arranged that once a week, all of us would stay over at my aunt's house for the night. Their house is smaller and not as cool as ours, but it was only fair. Whenever we stayed over, my aunt would set the air mattress up on the floor in the living room for me and my youngest sister to sleep on. My middle sister would have the couch, and my cousin would stay in the living room with us for a while, and then she'd go to sleep in her room. I always found it hard to sleep there because it was summer and very hot for our area, and I'm one of those people who needs it to be nice and ice cold in order to sleep. One night, I woke up at about 3:30. I lay there awake for a bit, then I actually started to get a bit chilly thanks to the ceiling fan that was going above our heads. So I covered up and closed my eyes, attempting to fall back to sleep. Suddenly the ceiling fan shut off. I heard somebody flip the switch, and then the fan stopped. I figured it was either my aunt or my uncle. My aunt didn't sleep well sometimes, and my uncle had to get up at 4 for work anyway. But when I opened my eyes and looked over to where the switch was, there was nobody there. That I found odd, because without the fan on, their house was silent. So I would have heard whoever it was walking back through the kitchen and into the living room. Thinking maybe I wasn't paying enough attention, I sat up and looked around. Now, at their house, in order to get out of sight from anyone in the living room, you would have had to trek across the kitchen and through the living room. There's no way that in the time it took me to open my eyes and sit up, that my aunt or uncle could have gotten back across the house, especially without me hearing them. Needless to say, after that, I was a bit freaked out and I couldn't go back to sleep. I still wonder who turned off the fan. Maybe there was a spirit there who saw I was getting cold. And that's The Fan Ghost by Bree in Michigan, USA, February 2003. It's a short little story, but it's a perfect setup for something that I've wanted to discuss for quite a long time, ever since we started the podcast.
Yeah.
Because one of the things we like to do is we like to share real ghost stories from the website, but also share our own experiences, of which we haven't had too many, but there have been a couple of things, like I think with everybody, there's been a couple of things that have happened to us, both individually and together, that are kind of unexplainable.
Yeah. And this is one that we've alluded to in the podcast before. Yeah. I remember early when we first started, I remember mentioning that there was a story that we experienced that we kind of argue about what it was, but that we would tell it when the time was right. And that is this story, and the time is right.
And
you
story,
don't tell it right, so I'm going to tell it.
All right.
So in the previous house that we lived in, it wasn't very old. It was built in the 90s. We were the second family to live in the house. But every once in a while, we had some weird things happen there. There was one time where, Vince, you were home alone. I was at work. You were in the basement watching TV, and you heard somebody walking around upstairs, Remember?
Yes.
So just little things like that. But this one night, we were getting ready for bed, and we had a ceiling fan in the bedroom, and it was the kind that had two pull chains. One would turn off the lights, and one would turn off the fan blades. And we didn't have the fan on, but the lights were on. And we were getting ready for bed, and all of a sudden, we hear clink, and the lights are off. And the first thought that passed through my mind was the power went out. But we could see down the hall that the other lights were on. So I thought, well, one of the light bulbs was burned out. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I guess one of the other bulbs burned out and it caused some kind of a short circuit and burned out the second one at the same time. So, you know, we just thought, okay, the lights are burned out.
It is strange for two light bulbs to burn out at the same time, but it was something that I was willing to accept. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I thought that's totally possible. So, you know, the next day or the day after or whatever, I'm cooking dinner. I'm in the kitchen. And Vince says, I'm going to go change the light bulbs in bedroom.
Finally got around to it.
Yeah, yeah. So a couple of minutes later, he comes down and he's got this perplexed look on his face. And I said, what's wrong? And he said, well, I first changed the light bulb that we knew was burned out and then turned on the light switch and it didn't come on. So I was really confused by that. And I thought, well, what the heck? Let's try this. So he pulled the chain on the ceiling fan and all three of the light bulbs came on. And so immediately I get goosebumps. I'm like, ooh, it's creepy, you know, like the house is haunted. And Vince is always very, you know, let's see here. It's probably not a ghost.
So well, the insinuation is that while we were lying in bed, getting ready for bed, something or someone mm-hmm. pulled the chain mm-hmm. and turned off the lights.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, that's where I went. Oh, somebody pulled the chain. And he said, well, it maybe, but it, you know, it's one of those like beaded metal chains. And he said, maybe what happened was the chain had been pulled at some point, but it hadn't clicked back up yet. And, you know, after a while, it just happened to click back up and the lights went out. And I thought, okay, well, that's possible. You know, I've seen before where you can pull the chain and it stays on until the chain reengages and then the lights go out. So I said, well, let's go try that. So we go to the bedroom and I reach up and grab the chain. And just as I start pulling it down, the second that chain moves, the lights go out. So it doesn't wait until you let go. The lights go out the second that chain is pulled in any amount. So that's our story. So we could not duplicate it. We hadn't lived in the house for very long at this point, I think. Maybe a couple of months.
See, the thing about it, though, is that I'm still not convinced it wasn't something mechanical.
Yeah, but we lived there for 13 years, and it never happened again.
Well, probably because I was very careful to, when flipping that switch, to make sure I pulled it all the way. But I thought, you know, it could have been possible.
But we never used the chain.
Well, the thing about it is that, and I'm still kind of there at this place where I'm just skeptical enough to ask the question, what's more likely, a mechanical failure or that some ghost, a person who had lived in the house before or some ghost swinging by decided to come into our room and say, I'm going to mess with these people and I'm going to turn the lights off.
I would do it. If I were a ghost, yeah, I'd be like, what can I manipulate in this room right now to freak these people out? Heck yes, I would. And I remember very, very distinctly hearing the clink as the chain was pulled.
I do remember that. Mm-hmm. I remember that. I know that there was actual physical motion. It wasn't that the light bulbs just went out of the, there was something that, mm-hmm. that moved.
Yeah. That chain made a clink sound.
In the mechanism.
And that chain did not make a clink sound until it hit the end. You know, when it clicked, when you pulled it all the way down. But by the time the chain was pulled all the way down, the lights were already out. I mean, that's just how it worked.
Right. I guess. So,
I don't know. I tend to think that it was just a transient ghost passing through going, watch this. These people are going to get freaked out.
Look at this guy in his underwear. He thinks he's cute. Nope. Mm-hmm. Lights off for you. I don't want to look at that anymore.
Yeah.
But again, this is one of those things that if I'm going to experience proof of the paranormal, I need it to be a little bit more clear cut than that.
I agree. I need to be confronted face to face by an apparition. And somebody else has to be there to verify it, possibly with video/photo proof, because otherwise I could write it off as a dream or a hallucination.
Well, that's just the thing, though. The thing is that if somebody experiences a ghost and the person next to them doesn't see it, or if a camera doesn't pick it up, does that mean that they didn't experience something? In other words, it's like if you have on 3D glasses and you see something popping out of a screen, it's not actually popping out. The person next to you doesn't see it. But because you have that extra ability to see what's on the screen in the third dimension, and maybe some people have the ability to see into the fourth dimension.
I think those are two completely unrelated things. I don't think you can compare them.
Well, I mean, 3D glasses are pretty cool. They do magical things.
Your mom does magical things.
Wow.
So that's our story, and we're sticking to it.
But I'm interested in knowing what you guys think.
Mm-hmm.
You guys listening, have you ever had an experience like that with a ceiling fan?
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, maybe somebody who installs ceiling fans or who's had a similar experience, or who knows? I don't know how those things, to me, those kinds of objects, they're magic. I don't know how those things work. I have no understanding of that. So if you have an explanation or a theory, I want to hear it. Let us have it. Go to castleofspirits.com. Get in touch.
Tell us
what you think.
Yes, we want to know.
Now, Jane, I do believe that you have a story to share too.
I did make mention of that, didn't I?
Sure did.
Mm-hmm.
Won't you tell us about it?
Why do you use that weird radio announcer voice?
Because I got a microphone in my face. What am I supposed to do? Pretend I'm on the phone?
No, just pretend you're a normal person, which is actually just pretending for you because you are not a normal person.
That I cannot do.
Yeah. Okay. This story is called Horror at Sandhill Park, and it was submitted by Liam McLaughlin in Devon, UK in August 2010. It was the geography of where we lived that drove us to the curious world of ghost hunting. We were always so bored of where we lived that we decided to seek out new thrills. Devon is a country rich in folklore and tales of the supernatural, and so this seemed the perfect course of action for us. I should elaborate slightly at this point. My friends and I lived in a quiet, rural country village called Kentisbeare, at the foot of the Blackdown Hills. As pretty and picturesque as this place was, it was no place for a group of 5 18-year-old men to find themselves. One shop, one pub, from which we were all barred, and miles of beautiful green nothingness. It was little wonder that our thirst for adventure and new experiences, something very novel in this tired corner of England, drove us to dabble in things that should probably remain undabbled. We had recently decided never to return to a previous spot called Ashcliffe Forest. Not for any reasons of the supernatural, oh no. The forest had been visited by us more times than I care to count, and nothing had ever, ever seemed even slightly out of place. Countless stories of murder, betrayal, and ancient evil shrouded the woods, but this apparently had no effect on the location's spectral relevance. We visited several more spots in the immediate area, old graveyards hidden deep in the Blackdown Forest, abandoned cottages, and a couple of places supposedly once used to some degree for the black arts. Sacrifices of animals and even people, witch hunts and occult services, etc. All of these proved very disappointing. The The months of never getting so much as an orb took their toll, and eventually we stopped looking altogether. That was until we heard about Sandhill. This place was an asylum, a mental institute. At least it used to be. It now stood abandoned at the mercy of the elements and the youngsters who had torn the place limb from limb. Photos and other information can be found on the internet. Just type Sandhill Park into any search engine. We did a little research before making our way there. I had found out about the place from my brother, who had heard about it through his friends in the town closest to Sandhill, called Taunton. Apparently, it started life as a country retreat for some rich aristocrat, a proud and massive estate. It was then used as a prisoner of war camp during World War I, and then was turned into an asylum. It was put out of service in the 80s to be used as a museum. The directors of said museum up sticks and left just 1 year after their arrival. Several companies have taken over since then, but none have stayed there very long at all. We set off at about 11 o'clock one evening. We were all a little nervous due to human factors, i.e. security and local troublemakers who often prowled around the estate. But all in all, we were just excited at the prospect of visiting a place recognized as being actually haunted. It took us 3 hours to find the place. Sandhill Park wasn't recognized on any map we had. So basically, it was a case of constantly stopping for directions, and this was our first clue that something wasn't right. Many of the people we asked warned us about the place. Some said it was evil and we were suicidal for stepping foot there. That if we were looking for the devil, then Sandhill Park was the place to look. Others simply turned around and walked away, appearing friendly and eager to help at first, but then becoming rigid at the mention of our destination. We thought this weird, but not so weird we would abandon our adventure. We had to ditch the car in a housing estate and walked about a mile up a steep, muddy track through very dense woods to get to the house. This made us all feel very uneasy. For the first time on our long journey, we all fell silent. I had a feeling that I was not the only one who felt as though we were being watched by something up ahead, mainly because one of the guys kept stopping every 100 yards or so and staring into the pitch-black nothingness. After 10 minutes or so, my torchlight caught something reflective, and I suddenly became aware of a row of very old-looking street lanterns stretching up the left side of the path. The reflection was a sign reading, "Welcome to Sandhill Park, home of the Blazers." The Blazers were the people who ran the museum. It was a museum commemorating the fire service. We had arrived. As we walked past the sign and caught our first glimpse of the mansion, we all stopped dead. A cold chill ran through me as I saw the towering silhouette of the main building before us. It was a 3-story monster. We walked forward very slowly, all watching our feet step through the undergrowth and across the uneven stone path toward the front entrance, and it was heavily boarded up. Every window was barred, a remnant from its prison days, and CCTV littered the whole building. After taking a photo of us all on the front porch between the 2 looming pillars, we scouted around the house. Graffiti sprawled the whole way round, reading unnerving promises like, "You are being watched," and "Leave while you can, this place is evil." We should have listened, really. There are 6 buildings in the estate, each one more dilapidated than the last. After quickly doing the rounds and checking them all out, we decided the second building, after the main house, to which entry was impossible, would be where we explored for fear that the other 4 would collapse in on us. The house looked like an old Midwestern train station, an annex in the middle with two wings stretching to either side, and the whole thing was made of whitewashed wood. Although, to be fair, there was very little white left. Years of rain and neglect had turned the whole structure a horrible greenish brown. Everyone commented on how creepy it looked, and in particular, how odd it was that there was a very old-looking bicycle hanging from a first-floor window. We tried not to let the universal feeling of unease get the better of us, and made our way inside. We found ourselves standing in a massive room. It looked like an old hospital ward, pediatrics probably, judging by the murals of Mickey Mouse and other cartoons around the walls. This didn't sit right with me. Something about the ghosts of children just seem all the more horrific, you know? Anyway, I digress. We searched around the room, rooting through debris for interesting artifacts and taking a few pictures when we decided to move on. We stepped through the large double doors that took us into a corridor that spanned the entire length of the building. There were about six sets of doors throughout, each one lying wide open and a couple pulled off their hinges. The windows along the length created streams of blue, dusty light at intervals along the hallway. I remember feeling trapped in there. I didn't feel the normal rush of a hyped-up man-child tiptoeing around some forest or an old barn house. I felt imprisoned. I was really starting to believe the rumors surrounding this place, and I knew that we were not the only souls creeping through the shadows. We decided at this point that in order to conduct a thorough search, we would need to split up. Me and my friend took the left wing, and the other three took the right. We would meet up outside in half an hour. As we walked very slowly down the old corridor, we flashed our torches in every single room we passed. Most were empty, apart from a few smashed-up cabinets or radiators pulled off the walls. One particular room, however, caught my attention. This room was still recognizable as a hospital room. My thoughts turned to the previous owner of the shabby, half-burned bed in the middle of the room. I envisioned a person tied and bound in a straitjacket, screaming and wailing for their freedom, trying to throw themselves off the bed, but thwarted by the belts across their chest. I felt sick and had to leave. We turned around and walked out of the room with the intention of continuing up the corridor, but something had other plans for us. As we left the room, my friend shone his torch down the direction we had come from. The other half of our group had made their way upstairs by now, as we could hear them thumping and talking above us. Something was there, though. Through the dust kicked up by our own heels and the darkness, we both saw a person walking towards us. The figure was nothing more than a hazy silhouette. It was about two doors away, about 50 feet maybe, and walking in a way that scared me the most. Other than its sheer size, it stood about 7 feet tall and almost touched the ceiling. It didn't really walk in any way we would know of. It jerked and twitched its way down the hallway, flailing its arms and legs as if it were a grotesque puppet. We both stood, petrified to the spot, as we tried to make sense of what was happening. After a few seconds, I noticed that it wasn't silent anymore. It was moving very slowly and was making a jabbering sort of noise. It sounded like the insane babbling of a mentally anguished man. The sound of this thing was horrific, unearthly by all measures. As it walked past a window frame, it kicked it out of the way in an all too realistic manner. That's when we decided to run. Seeing as how the only exit from the building from where we were was past the puppet man, we took the obvious recourse and ran upstairs, hoping to find the others. We got to the top and didn't stop running until we realized we were lost. We were in a pitch-black room that seemed to be infinitely large. Our torchlights didn't span from one side to the other due to a thick haze of dust in the air, and everything was freezing cold. My friend was really starting to panic. He was on the verge of tears and kept begging me to leave. I wanted to more than anything, but I couldn't. We seemed to have come to a dead end, and on top of that, I realized I could no longer hear the other three. We walked back the way we came, quietly whispering the names of our lost companions, when we heard an awful creaking and snapping noise. It sounded like wood splintering as the house buckled under our feet. It culminated in a huge crash that sent dust billowing down the corridor towards us. We went blind. At this point, there was no consoling us. We had seen the most terrifying entity of our lives. We were lost, and we were now certain our friends, including the driver, had been crushed to death. The only option, it seemed, was to make a leap of faith from the first floor window. The drop was only a few meters high, but we didn't know that at the time. It was too dark. I smashed the window with my torch and dived out. My friend did not follow until he had my assurances that it was safe. A dull thud as he hit the ground next to me. We walked around the building in search of our friends, noting that the whole estate seemed to be under a thin cloud of dust. Our worst feelings were realized when we reached the right wing. The entire roof was lying upside down in front of the building, and the front-facing wall had caved in with, we thought, our friends still inside. My accomplice started crying and shouting about how we should never have come when we both heard the same thing. A woman crying. It was coming from the house. From one of the rooms exposed by the collapsed wall, we saw something plummet and land in the rubble with a crash. It looked like a person. I ran over to see who it was, only to find a jacket where there should have been a body. My mind was going a million miles an hour. I was terrified for my life and that of my friends, but I couldn't leave. Not without them. We edged our way back into the large room and into the hallway. The figure from before was gone, so we walked through the right wing. We realized that the only damage was really to the roof and the front wall. Unless they were in the attic, they should have been fine. That was when we heard it again. The sickening babble of that thing from before. This time, though, it was in one of the rooms. We decided to start calling out for them. Why we didn't do that in the first place escapes me, but we had to make more noise than the puppet man for our own sanity. After a couple of times of shouting their names, we heard someone shouting back. The voice told us to come outside. We ran down the corridor through the large room and out the building to find our three friends sitting on a wall staring back at us. My heart rose and I felt like hugging them all, but celebration was short-lived. Just as we met and started talking and laughing, we all heard the same noise, a fast, rhythmic clicking sound. It was coming from an alley behind the house. Then a bell, ringing over and over again. I looked up at the first floor and swallowed hard. "Guys," I said timidly, "where did that old bike go?" My question was immediately answered. The very same old, rusted bike that was hanging from the building was now being pushed by an unseen force round the corner and up the path towards us. None of us could speak or even move. The bike got within about 10 feet when it was thrown violently at us at head level. It seemed to collide with at least two of the guys, but to be honest, we didn't stay to find out. We ran faster than we had ever run before, up the courtyard, past the main building, and towards the path leading to the car. Shattered glass, heavy undergrowth, and uneven stone paths made a quick exit from Sandhill pretty much impossible, but we did manage. None of us stopped or spoke a word until we were locked in the car under the streetlights of the estate we parked in. A quick head count, and we were off. One of the guys had a black eye, and another a deep cut in his eyebrow where the bike made contact. We decided it best to blame these injuries on falling over when the house collapsed. Telling people what happened would mean reliving it, and none of us wanted that. Sooner or later, we all got over what happened that night. We didn't really speak much about it. A couple of us tried to piece together what might have happened, what we had seen in the corridor. Who was the woman crying? Was that her jacket? How did half the house collapse? It turns out that the other three had heard the same noise we heard when they were upstairs, and they decided to leave. They ran out the back when they heard the creaking right above them and escaped unscathed. They had tried to find us, but didn't want to go back into the building. Good to know the caring was mutual. Anyway, this is the first time I've told anyone the full story. I've run it over with my brother and such, but I had to omit the bike part and the puppet man. It sounds pretty crazy, I think we can agree. Many, many questions were created that night. Questions that will forever stay unanswered by us guys anyway. Two questions were, however, answered quite spectacularly. Do ghosts exist? Without a doubt. And will we ever return to Sandhill Park? Not on your life. Thank you again to Liam McLaughlin in Devon, UK, for submitting Horror at Sandhill Park in August of 2010. And Vince, I have to tell you, I love everything about that story. It's so well written. It's the perfect length. I know it's kind of long, but I think we got all of the information that you could want out of it. And it even had a horrifying, jabbering puppet man.
Yeah, the apparition that comes down the hall in herky jerky motions and stuff like that.
Jabbering. Yeah. And I love that he used the word jabbering.
That's not something that I ever want to see, I don't think.
I mean,
would you be open to seeing something like that? I mean, how would that change you?
Yeah, it would. And it would be terrifying, and I would probably be scarred. And I'm not saying that the outcome of seeing it would be, you know, good. I'm not saying I'd see it and be like, all right, I saw something creepy. My life goal is fulfilled. But at the same time, yeah, my life goal would be fulfilled. I would absolutely love to see that. And I'll take the scars that come with it.
So are you saying that your life goal is to experience
Maybe not my ultimate life goal, but yes, it's on the list.
One of your bucket list things is to experience incontrovertible proof of the paranormal.
100%.
Well, I can't say that that's not one of the things that I'd like to experience. I mean, I just finished saying I don't ever want to see a herky-jerky ghost coming down at me.
Puppet man.
Going back. It sounds like something out of a Silent Hill sequel.
I would probably pee my pants and maybe die of a heart attack. But that's a risk I'd be willing to take.
But what a way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are other options.
Maybe I'd come back as a herky-jerky puppet man.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
What would possess somebody to come back as a herky-jerky puppet man? Maybe a life of
freaking the living out. That's a good enough goal. What else do you need?
You know, the living do need from time to time an occasional freaking out.
Yeah.
To shake them to their core, remind them.
Yes.
Of where they are.
Yes.
And what they have and what they have to lose.
And I need that reminder. And I'm kind of begging for that. Yeah.
You know, some people jump out of airplanes for these kinds of things.
No, not me. Mm-mm.
We can do that if you want.
I'll take the puppet man.
You'll take. All right. We either got the, what's the movie? The MST3K movie, the skydivers.
Oh yeah. The skydivers.
We've got the skydivers experience or the herky jerky man. Which do you choose?
Yeah. I'll take the puppet man.
Wow. Well, that was a damn good story.
It was so good. And, you know, Liam, if you're out there listening and you have any kind of update or any other stories or whatever, we want to hear from you.
And if anybody else out there, yes. And if anybody out there has ever experienced something like that, we want to hear from you too.
Yes.
You know, even if you don't write it in a story, just reach out and let us know. Mm-hmm. We have a phone number where you can call us.
And that phone number is 801-436-7838. Did you know that Ione Skye was married to Adam Horowitz?
I know she was like with Anthony Kiedis.
Yeah, something about talking about the herky jerky man.
Just, makes you think of Donovan.
It makes me think of Donovan. So now I've got the hurdy gurdy man stuck in my head.
Hey Jane.
Hey Vince.
You know, I've got a really cool other scary
you
ghost story
do?
To tell.
I am here for it.
Right. It's not terrifying, but it is.
That's okay.
Quite fascinating.
I'm here for an atmosphere piece too.
It is. And one of the stories, well, one type of story that I really, really like are stories that come from police officers, from officers of the law, people who, as they say, I mean, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard it said that these people are trained observers, right? So that when they, I guess maybe it's not so much that they go into training for it, but they, by virtue of the fact that they're on the job and they have to report everything that happened, they're kind of like their internal cameras are on.
Yeah.
And in this case, those observational skills are well appreciated. This is a story that came to us from an anonymous user.
An anonymous user.
An anonymous.
We're the pushers. You're the users.
From North Carolina, USA, in January of 2001. And it's called Phantom Tow Truck. Police work in a small, rural town on the graveyard shift normally means checking around businesses for burglars and answering an occasional prowler call. Occasionally, I come across a stranded motorist needing assistance. Valentine's Day 1986 started out no different than any other 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift. It was a cold, cloudy night, and the weatherman was calling for a winter storm. I made my usual business checks, and by 2 a.m. the snow had arrived in a big way. I decided I had better check a stretch of interstate that parallels the city limits, so I drove on through the snow looking for stranded motorists. Sure enough, about a half mile down from the exit, I spotted emergency flashers on a car on the shoulder on the northbound lane. The snow had just started, so I hit my blue lights and I crossed the median strip. As I pulled up behind the stranded car with Ohio license plates, I could see steam coming from under the hood, which was open about 2 inches. A blown radiator hose on a night as cold as tonight, I said to myself. The irony of the situation hadn't yet begun to dawn on me. I walked up, and the driver said that he and his wife were on a trip, headed back to Cleveland, when the car overheated. He said that a tow truck had stopped by, and that the mechanic had quickly diagnosed a problem as a blown radiator hose. The mechanic had told him that he could fix it right there on the shoulder of the road without towing it in, thus saving him a bill for towing. The mechanic had left to go back to his garage to retrieve the hose, and he'd return shortly. I told the driver I'd wait with them until the tow truck came back. I went back to my patrol car and radioed dispatch, told them my location, and that I'd be tied up for a few minutes. A few minutes turned into almost an hour. I walked back up to the stranded car and asked him which tow truck was supposed to be coming so that I could have dispatch call the garage and tell him to hurry up. The man said, "Joe's 24-hour service." He said he didn't ask the mechanic his name, but it did say Joe on his shirt. As I walked back to my car, it hit me like a brick in the back of the head. I turned and nearly ran back to the stranded car, and I was sure he could see the terror on my face when I asked, "What tow service did you say?" "Joe's 24-hour service," he said. "It said so on the side of his truck." I told him, "That service is unavailable," and I told him I'd call another tow truck. A while later, the second tow truck arrived, and he had the motorist fixed and on his way in no time. As the mechanic with the second truck was securing his tools, I told him what had happened. "There's no way," he said. We both got that same look of terror that I had displayed before. You see, about 4 years before, Joe Brewer had run a 24-hour tow service out of his garage. One night, he was found murdered in his garage. A couple of teenagers had tried to rob him late at night, and he refused to give up his money and was hit over the head with a wrench. When the investigation was published the next day in the newspaper, a local couple came forward stating that Joe had stopped to help them and had gone back to his garage and never returned. I feel a little safer now working the graveyard shift, knowing old Joe is out there with me, patrolling the interstate. And that one was called Phantom Tow Truck by Anonymous in North Carolina, January 2001. It sounds really familiar. We've never read this story on the podcast.
No, but I'm sure that back in the day when we used to sit and read Castle Spirits to each other, we definitely read that one. But very I have familiar. To tell you, I love that story. It's like the exact opposite of the vanishing hitchhiker trope.
The vanishing Good Samaritan.
Yeah. That's so good. It gives me chills.
I mean, it's got all the hallmarks mm-hmm. of a traditional mm-hmm. urban legend. And I love those stories.
Yeah. Those are so good.
Stories about people from beyond the grave who help mm-hmm. the living out of circumstances mm-hmm. where they would otherwise, you know, experience danger.
So it makes me come up with a question. We were talking about, you know, would we like the life-altering, you know, experience of seeing a ghost, like incontrovertible truth.
Proof
that there are ghosts. And so it makes me wonder, Vince and listeners, what type of ghost would you like to see? Like, there's all these tropes, right? There's the haunted house ghost. There's the poltergeist. There's the ghost that returns like clockwork to do the same action over and over. There's the disappearing hitchhiker. There's the disappearing Good Samaritan. Which one do you think of and think, yes, that is what I want to see?
If it were me, I would say that I would like to experience a ghost that I could interact with. Mm-hmm. Someone who could say something like, "Oh, my name is Charles Brewster and I died on this date and my will is hidden in this area," where I could actually go find it for them, for the family. And that would be proof to me, right?
Yeah.
Something that I couldn't possibly know. But seeing something that is unexplainable isn't necessarily proof, but it is a little strand of evidence, I suppose.
I want to see a vanishing hitchhiker. I have been fascinated with like Resurrection Mary. We should do an episode on Resurrection Mary someday.
Yeah.
And just vanishing hitchhiker. You know, we've done that before, but revisit it. But I love the vanishing hitchhiker trope. And I would love to be driving down the street late at night, see the glowing hitchhiker or, you know, woman in the white dress gliding down the side of the road. I would absolutely be like, pulling over, we're picking her up, and have them disappear out of the car. Yes, I want that.
Now, I don't know if
I'd probably crash the car and be injured in my fright, but, you know, small price to pay.
Well, and there's insurance too. So
right,
as long
that's
as nobody's physically hurt,
for.
As long as you don't actually perish and join Resurrection Mary and suddenly it's Resurrection Mary and Sidekick.
And also a question, does a car crash you know, because of a ghost, does that count as an act of God? That's a question.
That is a good question. Mm-hmm. I don't have an answer for that.
I don't either, actually.
Oh, okay, I thought maybe you knew the answer.
No, why would I know the answer to that?
Well, if there's any insurance agents out there, let us know.
Yeah, let us know.
Also, let us know if you guys listening have ever experienced something like that, or somebody in your family has told you that they've mm-hmm. experienced something like that. We want to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a lot of these things occur in certain parts of the country where you think that the people traveling through these places are almost primed for the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like the road outside Resurrection Cemetery. Mm-hmm. I'm sure people see trees as they're driving by and they think, oh my God, I saw Resurrection Mary. But I want to hear from people outside of those areas who have experienced something similar.
So speaking of getting in touch, we actually have a couple of messages that I thought we could read.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. We have a really nice message from Natalie. She submitted this through the lounge. She says, hello, Ghost Keepers. I heard about your podcast through a friend of yours who is also a friend of mine. I'd say mutual friend, but that seems a little too familiar on my part. And I've listened through your episodes a few times because it is so much fun. Thank you, Natalie.
Wow.
Your dynamic and the stories you tell, along with your references to things like Art Bell and The Twilight Zone, have inspired me to re-listen/watch those again.
Awesome.
I haven't paid either of those treasure troves of spooky goodness much mind for years. Don't ask me why. I don't really know. But I love all other things spooky, which is why my friend recommended your podcast. My dad, who passed away a little over a year ago, loved The Twilight Zone. And anytime there was a marathon, my siblings and I would sit up with my dad, eating all the junk food and absorbing all that eeriness until late into the night. Then it became a game of daring each other to go to sleep whilst pretending we heard weird noises or saw shadows. My siblings and I have seen real things, but we were also keen on freaking each other out with imitation phantoms. I love that idea. That sounds like such a fun game.
Natalie sounds like fun.
Heck yeah. When we got older, my dad would take us for long car rides and we'd listen to Art Bell or sometimes the reruns of those old creepy radio programs that they used to play on AM radio. As I said, your podcast has reminded me just how good those old things are and inspired me to dig back into them, which makes me feel closer to my dad, from whom I got my love of all things spooky. So I wanted to thank you for bringing all of that back to me. I took the long way around to do it. Sorry about that. But I really did want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being such a joy and reminding me of my roots. Natalie, thank you so much for such a lovely message. And I'm so glad that we can kind of help nudge you back toward that.
Yeah.
That's a lovely connection with your father and your family as a whole.
And thanks a lot, Natalie, because you make me feel really old, because I bet your father was about my age, because I grew up watching old Twilight Zone reruns. I actually watched those with my father also. He also died last year. But the whole thing about the Art Bell connection, you know, Jane and I were listening to Art Bell when he was on the air, when mm-hmm. he was alive, and you've just made us feel old. So I hope you feel good. Thanks a lot. No, but seriously, I appreciated that very greatly. And sometimes we just forget, you know, we forget. I haven't watched the Twilight Zone episode in a couple of years. I have mm-hmm. all five seasons up there, and maybe it's time to crack them open and start watching them again.
I agree.
Hey, and I have one.
Oh, yeah?
A message here from Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It says, hello, Vince and Jane. Huge fan.
Aw.
Thank you. You are doing justice to the treasure of stories of the castle. One of my favorite stories that really scared me was the voice in the attic that I believe Vince wrote.
Heck yeah.
I believe you're right. She says, so spooky, chilling. The reason I'm writing is because I don't see anywhere to get merch. I would love the option to get a t-shirt, and especially if Jane designed it. She does illustrations, right? Please, please, please? Thanks so much for all you do. 3 exclamation points.
Oh, Stacy, thank you.
Thank you.
We don't have any merch. We're not against someday having merch, but we don't at this moment.
I mean, Castle of Spirits merch would be, it's kind of like a dream thing, you know, when we get mm-hmm. to the point where we can actually produce merch that is consumed en masse. I mean, we could design a couple of t-shirts and maybe a poster or two, mm-hmm. but that's something that we've actually discussed that in private, mm-hmm. in the deep, dark cellars of the castle where mm-hmm. nobody else can hear us. And we got some ideas brewing. So
yeah,
thanks for giving us that gentle nudge.
Yeah. We weren't really sure if anybody would be interested in that. So
anybody thanks. Else out there interested, let us know what you think.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of merch would you like?
Well, we do have a couple of very specific ideas for some merch type things we want to develop, but that's a ways off.
But just hang in there with us,
mm-hmm.
and maybe your unfailing loyalty will pay off.
And so, Vince, I also had something else I wanted to talk about. It's a little bit of a way to shame you.
Oh, no.
Although I guess I'm also culpable. In our last episode, you read, it was an email from a listener who was looking for a story that they had read on the website years
right,
ago
about
an old woman yeah. looking in the mirror. And remember that?
And like getting sucked up into the mirror mm-hmm. or something like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. You found the story?
No. But I read the exact same email on the episode right before.
No.
Yes.
Shut up.
I did. But I mean, like I said, I'm also culpable because I could have.
Why didn't you tell me?
I could have said, Vince, I read this email last week.
Oh my God. Sorry. So I guess maybe. Subconsciously, mm-hmm. self-consciously too, I wanted to find the answer to that damn question.
We just really want to know what story
that was.
I was
really committed to answering that yes. person's question for some reason. And
yes.
All right, well, I just paint a big L on my forehead and let's move on because mm-hmm. I won't make that mistake again.
And now Vince would like to read you an email about somebody looking for a story about an old woman getting pulled into the mirror.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and read that email.
This is a brand new, no. All right, fine. You know?
So this was a fun episode. I really enjoyed this one. How about you?
I did greatly. And I hear the music in the background calling us to our end. Mm-hmm. It's time to go feed the ghosts.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that? Calling us to our end? What?
It's just calling us to the end of the episode.
Oh, not the end of our lives.
Not the end of the road, no.
Okay.
Although it's funny because every time I'm walking Freya through the cemetery, mm-hmm. I take our dog on a walk through the cemetery.
And that's not a joke. That's actual facts.
Yes, they know this. And I'll tell her, you know, say, let's cross the road here. And I'm like, okay, let's cross over now, Freya. And I always stop and I go, just let's go to the other side of the road.
Freya, go toward the light.
I'm like, please. It's like using the wrong language in the wrong place. Anyway, so thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode.
Yes. And please send us your stories. Send us your comments. Send us your ideas. Send us your anecdotes. Whatever.
Emotional outbursts.
That's right. We want all of it.
And we remind you to get the hints to castleofspirits.com.
Vince.
Yeah.
I've never stopped you to embarrass you about this. But
God, another one?
Yeah. But you know that get thee hence means get behind, right? So you're telling people get behind the website. Not get to the website.
Get thee to the website.
Yes.
Maybe I should just stop saying the these and the thous and the henses. And I
yeah.
should say, go visit us on www.castleofspirits.com.
No, don't do that.
Can I say it like Phoebe Judge and say castleofspirits.com?
.com. I love Phoebe.
All right, everybody.
Head on over to castleofspirits.com and give us everything you got. We're here for it.
And if you like this show, tell a friend.
And if you hate it, continue to tell two enemies.
It's working so far.
Mm-hmm. And remember, tonight when you're sleeping, if you hear jabbering in the hall, it's just the herky-jerky puppet man.
Oh, God.